Cambridge International Examinations. Specimen Paper 2015. English as a Second Language. Listening Comprehension, Extended. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the exam. Questions 1 to 4. You will hear four short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than three words for each detail. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. Where does this conversation take place? B. What two things does the woman decide to buy?
Buy your fruit and vegetables here, everyone. No need to go to the expensive supermarket. You can get all you need here in your local market. Come and take a look. Buy some top-class peaches or green beans for your supper tonight. Good morning, madam. What can I get for you?
I think I'll just take this bunch of carrots, please.
No problem. Here you are. And how about some peas, all picked fresh today, or some new potatoes?
They do look good, but no thanks. But I will take those tomatoes. It's okay, you can put them in the same bag.
Buy your fruit and vegetables here, everyone. No need to go to the expensive supermarket. You can get all you need here in your local market. Come and take a look. Buy some top-class peaches or green beans for your supper tonight. Good morning, madam. What can I get for you?
I think I'll just take this bunch of carrots, please.
No problem. Here you are. And how about some peas, all picked fresh today, or some new potatoes?
They do look good, but no thanks. But I will take those tomatoes. It's okay, you can put them in the same bag.
Question 2. A. Which room is the student trying to find? B. Where exactly should the student go to find the room he needs? Give two details.
Excuse me, sorry to bother you, but can you help me? This is my first day at college and I'm really lost.
You'll soon get used to where everything is. This is the drama studio. But where do you want to go?
I'm trying to find the science lab. I have a physics lecture and I'm so late.
Well, you're heading in the right direction. Look, you see those stairs? Go up the stairs, then turn left for the art room and turn right for the science lab. The name is written on the door, so you can't miss it.
Oh, thanks so much. I'll have to rush. I'm so late. And for my first lecture of the year, too. Excuse me. Sorry to bother you, but can you help me? This is my first day at college, and I'm really lost.
You'll soon get used to where everything is. This is the drama studio. But where do you want to go?
I'm trying to find the science lab. I have a physics lecture and I'm so late.
Well, you're heading in the right direction. Look, you see those stairs? Go up the stairs, then turn left for the art room and turn right for the science lab. The name is written on the door, so you can't miss it.
Oh, thanks so much. I'll have to rush. I'm so late. And for my first lecture of the year, too.
Question 3. A. What does the new drink called Sundrops have in it to keep you fit and well? B. Which flavour does the advert recommend if you want a change from the usual flavours?
Is it raining outside? No need to be miserable. Try our brand new drink, Sundrops. Sundrops will brighten your day. Full of flavour, full of fun, and full of vitamin C for health. This is a fizzy drink with a difference. Sundrops. Buy some today and make every day a sunny day. Sundrops is also available in blueberry, so if you're fed up with boring old orange and lemon flavours, why not give it a go? Is it raining outside? No need to be miserable. Try our brand new drink, Sundrops. Sundrops will brighten your day. Full of flavour, full of fun, and full of vitamin C for health. This is a fizzy drink with a difference. Sundrops. Buy some today and make every day a sunny day. Sundrops is also available in blueberry, so if you're fed up with boring old orange and lemon flavours, why not give it a go?
Question 4. A. Apart from taking a walk, what else does the speaker suggest the tourists do when they make their stop? B. When will the trip definitely be finished by?
Welcome aboard the pleasure boat Adventurer. First, let me tell you about the cruise. We're going to travel along the river, upstream, for an hour. Lots of opportunities for you to take photos and do some sunbathing. Then we'll dock and drop you off at a small village where you can stretch your legs. I really recommend that you visit the castle there. Please come back to the boat promptly after 45 minutes. The trip will last 3.5 hours altogether, and we will be back here at the jetty at some time between 2:30 and 3 o'clock. Now for some safety information. Welcome aboard the pleasure boat Adventurer. First, let me tell you about the cruise. We're going to travel along the river, upstream, for an hour. Lots of opportunities for you to take photos and do some sunbathing. Then we'll dock and drop you off at a small village where you can stretch your legs. I really recommend that you visit the castle there. Please come back to the boat promptly after 45 minutes. The trip will last 3.5 hours altogether, and we will be back here at the jetty at some time between 2:30 and 3 o'clock. Now for some safety information.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear question 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 5. You will hear a talk given by a woman who is organising an exhibition of items found in a 2,000-year-old Chinese tomb. Listen to the talk and complete the details below. Write 1 or 2 words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Good afternoon. I've come to tell you about a wonderful exhibition that we have been able to arrange here in our city. It's an exhibition of the Terracotta Army from China. We will have 316 items on show, including 10 terracotta warriors, or soldiers, 120 other figures, and almost 200 other items from the ancient tombs. Many of these have never before been put on display outside China. Let me start by telling you the story behind these world-famous warriors. It began more than 2,000 years ago with a powerful ruler called Qin Shi Huangdi. He was a very fierce leader, and there was much bloodshed during his rule. However, one positive outcome was that he managed to bring together 7 warring kingdoms and combine them into the one country we now call China. Qin was the very first emperor of China. Up until this time, it had been the tradition or custom, when the rulers died, to kill all the people who had served him in life so that they could be buried in his tomb with him. But Qin changed this cruel practice and instead arranged for an enormous army of life-sized soldiers made out of terracotta, a kind of clay, to be buried with him after his death. This was quite a change from what had happened before Qin's time. What is surprising is that each warrior was crafted by hand. It is believed it took only 2 years for these warriors, all 8,000 of them, to be made so beautifully. Even more incredible is the fact that the face of each warrior was unique. The weapons found with the soldiers are extremely interesting. Crossbows with arrows have been unearthed, as well as swords and spears, and they are all still very sharp and rust-free. They were covered in a layer of chromium, which protected them very well. As you can imagine, the biggest challenge has been transporting the delicate figures here from China. They had to be packed very carefully in purpose-built packing cases to make sure they could not move about, and then loaded into trucks. After this, the crates were transferred onto a special cargo plane for the second part of the journey. We're expecting around 150,000 visitors to the exhibition. The Terracotta Army exhibition in the British Museum in London made 2008 the most successful year ever for that museum. The first batch of tickets sold out so fast that the museum had to stay open until midnight at weekends, and even then, many hundreds of people were turned away. Well, I'm expecting our latest exhibition to be equally as popular. Make sure you book your tickets in advance. You can make your booking either online or over the phone. An event like this is a wonderful way to bring people and cultures together.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Good afternoon. I've come to tell you about a wonderful exhibition that we have been able to arrange here in our city. It's an exhibition of the Terracotta Army from China. We will have 316 items on show, including 10 terracotta warriors, or soldiers, 120 other figures, and almost 200 other items from the ancient tombs. Many of these have never before been put on display outside China. Let me start by telling you the story behind these world-famous warriors. It began more than 2,000 years ago with a powerful ruler called Qin Shi Huangdi. He was a very fierce leader, and there was much bloodshed during his rule. However, one positive outcome was that he managed to bring together 7 warring kingdoms and combine them into the one country we now call China. Qin was the very first emperor of China. Up until this time, it had been the tradition or custom, when the rulers died, to kill all the people who had served him in life so that they could be buried in his tomb with him. But Qin changed this cruel practice and instead arranged for an enormous army of life-sized soldiers made out of terracotta, a kind of clay, to be buried with him after his death. This was quite a change from what had happened before Qin's time. What is surprising is that each warrior was crafted by hand. It is believed it took only 2 years for these warriors, all 8,000 of them, to be made so beautifully. Even more incredible is the fact that the face of each warrior was unique. The weapons found with the soldiers are extremely interesting. Crossbows with arrows have been unearthed, as well as swords and spears, and they are all still very sharp and rust-free. They were covered in a layer of chromium, which protected them very well. As you can imagine, the biggest challenge has been transporting the delicate figures here from China. They had to be packed very carefully in purpose-built packing cases to make sure they could not move about, and then loaded into trucks. After this, the crates were transferred onto a special cargo plane for the second part of the journey. We're expecting around 150,000 visitors to the exhibition. The Terracotta Army exhibition in the British Museum in London made 2008 the most successful year ever for that museum. The first batch of tickets sold out so fast that the museum had to stay open until midnight at weekends, and even then, many hundreds of people were turned away. Well, I'm expecting our latest exhibition to be equally as popular. Make sure you book your tickets in advance. You can make your booking either online or over the phone. An event like this is a wonderful way to bring people and cultures together.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear question 6. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 6. You will hear 6 people talking about music. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list, A to G, which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. Speaker 1.
Music is a very important part of my life. I've been learning the violin ever since I was 6. I'm not very good, my sister's much better, but I still enjoy it very much. I've always been quite a shy person, and I think I express my feelings more openly when I'm playing. It's somehow more difficult for me to say what I mean. I listen to music, classical usually, almost all the time, when I'm on the bus or jogging in the park, when I'm at my desk working or having a bath.
Speaker 2.
Both my parents play in an orchestra, so I've always grown up with music. I play the piano quite well and also love playing the guitar while my younger sister sings. Music's probably the most important aspect of my life, but I'd prefer it to stay a hobby rather than having to earn a living by playing. I love listening to music at least as much as performing, but what I think I love most is moving to music when a beautiful tune is playing. You just can't beat that.
Speaker 3.
I spend most weekends at a gig because I'm in a band with a couple of friends. We don't really earn any money from our live performances, but that's okay, because the chance to meet lots of nice people is quite enough for us. Anyway, I suspect it wouldn't be so enjoyable if we were doing it for anything but fun. I'm certainly glad my dad made me carry on with guitar lessons. To begin with, I couldn't be bothered to play the guitar, but I changed my mind after playing in a school concert when everyone said how great I was.
Speaker 4.
I've never had a music lesson and I can't play any instruments, but I listen to music a lot. My preferences have expanded in the last few years. I used to listen only to pop, but an aunt took me to a festival one weekend and that set off a passion for Celtic folk music. Some of the old songs are just so moving. I've been listening to some recordings of famous operas, and I'm going to my first live performance next week. I won't understand the words because it's in Russian, but I imagine the music will communicate the performer's feelings.
Speaker 5.
I had my first violin lesson at the age of 4, and now I also play the guitar and the piano. I tried the flute at one point too, but I haven't kept that up, as I'm really too busy with all my schoolwork. I've been lucky enough to go to performances by some of the top players in the world, and my goal is to find work as a violinist in one of the world's leading orchestras. I think you can convey feeling best through the violin. It can express any mood, from joy to sorrow, anger to peace.
Speaker 6.
I love going to live events and watching the performers as they play. I wish I was as good as most of them are. I can strum a guitar a bit, but I'm always reluctant to play in public. I love listening to recorded as well as live music. I usually listen to it on my phone and have a great selection of varied stuff on my playlist. If I'm feeling down, there are a few songs that have this amazing power to cheer me up. I think music really can move you in the most extraordinary ways.
Now you will hear the 6 speakers again. Speaker 1.
Music is a very important part of my life. I've been learning the violin ever since I was 6. I'm not very good, my sister's much better, but I still enjoy it very much. I've always been quite a shy person, and I think I express my feelings more openly when I'm playing. It's somehow more difficult for me to say what I mean. I listen to music, classical usually, almost all the time, when I'm on the bus or jogging in the park, when I'm at my desk working or having a bath.
Speaker 2.
Both my parents play in an orchestra, so I've always grown up with music. I play the piano quite well and also love playing the guitar while my younger sister sings. Music's probably the most important aspect of my life, but I'd prefer it to stay a hobby rather than having to earn a living by playing. I love listening to music at least as much as performing, but what I think I love most is moving to music when a beautiful tune is playing. You just can't beat that.
Speaker 3.
I spend most weekends at a gig because I'm in a band with a couple of friends. We don't really earn any money from our live performances, but that's okay, because the chance to meet lots of nice people is quite enough for us. Anyway, I suspect it wouldn't be so enjoyable if we were doing it for anything but fun. I'm certainly glad my dad made me carry on with guitar lessons. To begin with, I couldn't be bothered to play the guitar, but I changed my mind after playing in a school concert when everyone said how great I was.
Speaker 4.
I've never had a music lesson and I can't play any instruments, but I listen to music a lot. My preferences have expanded in the last few years. I used to listen only to pop, but an aunt took me to a festival one weekend and that set off a passion for Celtic folk music. Some of the old songs are just so moving. I've been listening to some recordings of famous operas and I'm going to my first live performance next week. I won't understand the words because it's in Russian, but I imagine the music will communicate the performer's feelings.
Speaker 5.
I had my first violin lesson at the age of 4, and now I also play the guitar and the piano. I tried the flute at one point too, but I haven't kept that up, as I'm really too busy with all my schoolwork. I've been lucky enough to go to performances by some of the top players in the world, and my goal is to find work as a violinist in one of the world's leading orchestras. I think you can convey feeling best through the violin. It can express any mood, from joy to sorrow, anger to peace.
Speaker 6.
I love going to live events and watching the performers as they play. I wish I was as good as most of them are. I can strum a guitar a bit, but I'm always reluctant to play in public. I love listening to recorded as well as live music. I usually listen to it on my phone and have a great selection of varied stuff on my playlist. If I'm feeling down, there are a few songs that have this amazing power to cheer me up. I think music really can move you in the most extraordinary ways.
That is the end of the short talks about music. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. You will hear Annabelle, a student, asking John Morgan, a wildlife photographer, some questions about his career as part of a school radio programme. Listen to their conversation and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the talk twice.
Thank you for agreeing to answer some questions about being a wildlife photographer. Is it something you always wanted to do?
Not as a career, really. I was terribly bored at school, but went on to do a college course in business studies. Not at all related to what I would do later in life. What I did outside school hours was more meaningful. I had a passion for art and used photography to get reference material for my art.
Did you find it difficult to make the change from business to photography?
Well, I wasn't any good at painting, so I turned to photography and got into terrible debt after buying some top-of-the-range equipment. I was working full-time as a sales rep, selling biscuits of all things, but spent many nights photographing foxes. I got some nice fox images which were accepted by an agency.
You photograph all sorts of wildlife in many different parts of the world. Which is your favourite place for taking photographs?
Actually, I don't travel that often, though I am looking forward to a trip I've planned to the Antarctic next year. I prefer to concentrate on South Africa. I have a good relationship with the park's authorities, so I get to visit areas where there is plenty of interesting wildlife to photograph. I think India would be a wonderful place to photograph tigers. I'd love to go there.
How do you prepare before going on a trip?
If it's a new location, there's lots of research to be done. However, I leave planning the route to my support team. Reading up about the animals I'm going to photograph is always interesting, but it's usually best to go without too many fixed ideas. I do think about the photographs I want to take, though, and I write down plenty of ideas to give myself a clear objective.
And you've had several books published which are full of your amazing photographs. How long does it take to complete an assignment?
That depends. If I'm doing a travel feature, it might take a couple of months. I'm very proud of my book African Adventure, which has sold more copies than any of the others. That was put together in about 6 months, entirely from photographs I'd already taken. On the other hand, it took me about 2 years to take all the photographs I needed for Wildlife Safari.
You rarely do close-up studies of animals. Why is that?
Yes, I do try to avoid close encounters. Once I nearly trod on an enormous crocodile, but that doesn't worry me. Actually, taking photos of animals up close is bad for the animals because it causes stress, and animals that are uncomfortable don't make good pictures.
What do you find most satisfying about being a wildlife photographer?
I certainly enjoy the travelling, but you don't have to be a photographer to do that. I do very much like the idea that my pictures educate people who don't travel the world about the animals they'll never get the opportunity to see in the wild. Of course, a job has to provide you with an income. I'll admit to being comfortably well off, but that's not my incentive.
What is the best piece of advice you'd give to someone who wants to become a wildlife photographer?
There are more courses around than when I started. It's obviously a good idea to look into those. You'll learn all the technical stuff that way. I always found it useful to check out what established photographers were doing. There are often exhibitions you can visit. However, you can't beat getting loads of practice. Join a photographic club and take as many pictures as you can. And it's worth remembering that you don't have to wait until you can afford a very expensive camera.
Thank you very much, John, for talking to me.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Thank you for agreeing to answer some questions about being a wildlife photographer. Is it something you always wanted to do?
Not as a career, really. I was terribly bored at school, but went on to do a college course in business studies. Not at all related to what I would do later in life. What I did outside school hours was more meaningful. I had a passion for art and used photography to get reference material for my art.
Did you find it difficult to make the change from business to photography?
Well, I wasn't any good at painting, so I turned to photography and got into terrible debt after buying some top-of-the-range equipment. I was working full-time as a sales rep, selling biscuits of all things, but spent many nights photographing foxes. I got some nice fox images which were accepted by an agency.
You photograph all sorts of wildlife in many different parts of the world. Which is your favourite place for taking photographs?
Actually, I don't travel that often, though I am looking forward to a trip I've planned to the Antarctic next year. I prefer to concentrate on South Africa. I have a good relationship with the park's authorities, so I get to visit areas where there is plenty of interesting wildlife to photograph. I think India would be a wonderful place to photograph tigers. I'd love to go there.
How do you prepare before going on a trip?
If it's a new location, there's lots of research to be done. However, I leave planning the route to my support team. Reading up about the animals I'm going to photograph is always interesting, but it's usually best to go without too many fixed ideas. I do think about the photographs I want to take, though, and I write down plenty of ideas to give myself a clear objective.
And you've had several books published which are full of your amazing photographs. How long does it take to complete an assignment?
That depends. If I'm doing a travel feature, it might take a couple of months. I'm very proud of my book African Adventure, which has sold more copies than any of the others. That was put together in about 6 months, entirely from photographs I'd already taken. On the other hand, it took me about 2 years to take all the photographs I needed for Wildlife Safari.
You rarely do close-up studies of animals. Why is that?
Yes, I do try to avoid close encounters. Once I nearly trod on an enormous crocodile, but that doesn't worry me. Actually, taking photos of animals up close is bad for the animals because it causes stress. And animals that are uncomfortable don't make good pictures.
What do you find most satisfying about being a wildlife photographer?
I certainly enjoy the travelling, but you don't have to be a photographer to do that. I do very much like the idea that my pictures educate people who don't travel the world about the animals they'll never get the opportunity to see in the wild. Of course, a job has to provide you with an income. I'll admit to being comfortably well off, but that's not my incentive.
What is the best piece of advice you'd give to someone who wants to become a wildlife photographer?
There are more courses around than when I started. It's obviously a good idea to look into those. You'll learn all the technical stuff that way. I always found it useful to check out what established photographers were doing. There are often exhibitions you can visit. However, you can't beat getting loads of practice. Join a photographic club and take as many pictures as you can. And it's worth remembering that you don't have to wait until you can afford a very expensive camera.
Thank you very much, John, for talking to me.
That is the end of the interview. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Part A. You will hear a biologist giving a talk about bats and the problems faced by the species. Listen to the talk and complete the notes in Part A. Write one or two words in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Welcome to today's talk. Today I'm going to tell you about bats, which, as you know, are small, flying, nocturnal mammals. Recently, the population of bats in some areas of North America and Canada has declined by up to 90%. One of the main causes of this decline is thought to be a newly identified disease known as white nose syndrome. This was first identified in a cave near New York in 2006, but unfortunately, it has spread across a wide area since then. The illness is caused by a fungus in the soil, and it's thought that it was introduced to the North American continent by European tourists. There's currently no known treatment, which has alarmed conservationists. They estimate that as many as 6.7 million bats have died so far. So, conservationists have come up with an ingenious idea to protect bat populations. They have recently built an artificial bat cave, the first of its kind. At 78 feet long and 16 feet wide, it's about the size of a mobile home. It has a ceiling that's 11 feet above the ground, and it's textured so bats can cling to it. Humans can access the cave through heavy steel doors, which lead to the chamber where bats can hibernate. The whole cave is covered by about 4 feet of earth. The only visible part of the cave from above is a concrete shaft which the bats are able to dive into. Another considerable threat is to migrating bats, and this threat is from wind turbines. Interestingly, many people think of these as an environmentally friendly development as they produce a so-called green form of energy. But thousands of dead bats have been found near wind farms, and it is thought that rapid air pressure changes close to the spinning blades of the wind turbines can cause the lungs of the bats to collapse. Before I talk more about what is being done to protect bats, I'd like to give you a few minutes to discuss the issues raised so far. Are there any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Welcome to today's talk. Today I'm going to tell you about bats, which, as you know, are small, flying, nocturnal mammals. Recently, the population of bats in some areas of North America and Canada has declined by up to 90%. One of the main causes of this decline is thought to be a newly identified disease known as white nose syndrome. This was first identified in a cave near New York in 2006, but unfortunately, it has spread across a wide area since then. The illness is caused by a fungus in the soil, and it's thought that it was introduced to the North American continent by European tourists. There's currently no known treatment, which has alarmed conservationists. They estimate that as many as 6.7 million bats have died so far. So, conservationists have come up with an ingenious idea to protect bat populations. They have recently built an artificial bat cave, the first of its kind. At 78 feet long and 16 feet wide, it's about the size of a mobile home. It has a ceiling that's 11 feet above the ground, and it's textured so bats can cling to it. Humans can access the cave through heavy steel doors, which lead to the chamber where bats can hibernate. The whole cave is covered by about 4 feet of earth. The only visible part of the cave from above is a concrete shaft which the bats are able to dive into. Another considerable threat is to migrating bats, and this threat is from wind turbines. Interestingly, many people think of these as an environmentally friendly development as they produce a so-called green form of energy. But thousands of dead bats have been found near wind farms, and it is thought that rapid air pressure changes close to the spinning blades of the wind turbines can cause the lungs of the bats to collapse. Before I talk more about what is being done to protect bats, I'd like to give you a few minutes to discuss the issues raised so far. Are there any questions?
Question 8, Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about saving bats and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
Wasn't that a fascinating talk about bats the other week? I went off afterwards and had a look at loads of websites. I never realised that there's so much people can do to protect bats.
Yeah, and it's made me think about trying to get some bat houses put up where I live.
I read that if you put a bat house on a tree, then it's much less likely to be occupied than if it's on a building or pole.
And apparently, if you put two houses back to back, that's the ideal location. And it even advises you on what colour you should paint a bat house.
I guess those are good things to consider. But I read that maintaining the proper temperature is probably the single most important thing to get right. It even tells you which species prefer warmer houses and which ones don't mind if it's cooler.
I'll have to check out what species are likely to be in my area before I put up a house then, won't I?
And it's worth thinking about the design of the house too. You're more likely to attract bats to the bat house if it's bigger. If there's just a single chamber in it, then they're not so likely to settle in it.
I also spent a bit more time finding out about wind farms. I was actually quite shocked in that talk to hear that so many bats are killed by wind turbines, especially the big industrial ones. Apparently, one way of protecting the bats around these turbines is to simply turn them off during feeding times.
What's the bat's natural habitat?
I think it's basically open countryside. They need forests, fields, places like that, where they can hunt for insects and raise their young.
I suppose they need access to water too, rivers or lakes.
They do. Bats even drink water out of swimming pools, though I read that that's the most common cause of drowning. They get stuck because there's no way for them to climb out.
That's awful.
I know. That reminds me of another thing that people should avoid doing. In tropical areas, people shouldn't cut back the branches of their palm trees, and in particular when bats are raising their young from May to September.
I bet people don't realise that.
Anyway, look at the time. We'd better go to our next lecture.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
Wasn't that a fascinating talk about bats the other week? I went off afterwards and had a look at loads of websites. I never realised that there's so much people can do to protect bats.
Yeah, and it's made me think about trying to get some bat houses put up where I live.
I read that if you put a bat house on a tree, then it's much less likely to be occupied than if it's on a building or pole.
And apparently, if you put two houses back to back, that's the ideal location. And it even advises you on what colour you should paint a bat house.
I guess those are good things to consider, but I read that maintaining the proper temperature is probably the single most important thing to get right. It even tells you which species prefer warmer houses and which ones don't mind if it's cooler.
I'll have to check out what species are likely to be in my area before I put up a house then, won't I?
And it's worth thinking about the design of the house too. You're more likely to attract bats to the bat house if it's bigger. If there's just a single chamber in it, then they're not so likely to settle in it.
I also spent a bit more time finding out about wind farms. I was actually quite shocked in that talk to hear that so many bats are killed by wind turbines, especially the big industrial ones. Apparently, one way of protecting the bats around these turbines is to simply turn them off during feeding times.
What's the bat's natural habitat?
I think it's basically open countryside. They need forests, fields, places like that, where they can hunt for insects and raise their young.
I suppose they need access to water too, rivers or lakes.
They do. Bats even drink water out of swimming pools, though I read that that's the most common cause of drowning. They get stuck because there's no way for them to climb out.
That's awful.
I know. That reminds me of another thing that people should avoid doing. In tropical areas, people shouldn't cut back the branches of their palm trees, and in particular when bats are raising their young from May to September.
I bet people don't realise that.
Anyway, look at the time. We'd better go to our next lecture.
That is the end of question 8 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number, and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers. Thank you, everyone.